since I came just yesterday. It's made all that I learned. The emptiness of life examined.
Well, hello out there, and welcome to another episode of Things I Learned While Learning Other Things. This is an attempt by me, Joe Morahan, and my brother JS, to provide you with a series of interesting, informative, educational, and yeah, we hope enjoyable stories that will help you navigate through those high seas of life. We thank you for listening. We hope you find it entertaining. And we continue the story of Utopia. Give us more. Well, Thomas More, 2 of 7, maybe. Anyway, we've been discussing utopia, that perfect society, paradise on earth. And as such, it is worth reporting. I have just concluded reading The City of Intellect, authored by Nicholas Dirks, the former chancellor of the University of California at Berkeley, who relates how in his opening address at the university at Berkeley, he welcomed everyone to utopia. Now, this might have been a mistake. What with Antifa rioting, attempted break-ins at the chancellor's own residence on campus by what I call home invaders, that he refers to simply as protesters, the need for speech codes at Berkeley, the banning of all hate speech, no matter what that means at Berkeley, the creation of safe zones for the students of, you know, these sensitive types, demands that critical race theory be adopted at Berkeley, and Dirk's suggestion that French deconstructionist philosopher Michel Foucault be studied at the university. I mean, this is the man who had written words that said, words mean nothing. They don't mean what they say, which can only lead to the squirrely result, the inevitable anarchy that, well, nothing means anything. And at Berkeley, merit need be demoted in the interest of diversity as a core value. I believe it should be clear to Chancellor Dirk that his effort to create utopia spelled problems to come. And as Shakespeare had written 400 years ago, when troubles come, they come in threes or more. Yes, 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 Chancellor, they do. And I would be remiss, however, if I do not provide now, immediately, for the benefit of all those sensitive young people out there, if I don't provide a trigger warning. Trigger warning. We are going to talk about a man, a male. Back when men were men, real men. You know, back when meat, it's what's for dinner, actually was a subliminal message for men, a secret code for people who identified as males, and it meant something. So Thomas More, he was a toxic male to some. Shockingly enough to me, though, he's a canonized saint of the Roman Catholic Church. He was a man whom was filled with ideas. Some, to me, anyway, seem pretty nutty. You know, some of his ideas are rather scary. Other thoughts place him on the spectrum, no doubt. You know, no doubt OCD. Other of his ideas seem very progressive. Some misogynist by intention. Others speak to the age of Aquarius. And other ravings and rantings will infuriate feminists and Hillary Clinton for sure. Uniquely, he's able, you know, right-wing fundamentalists will cheer on aspects of Moore's dreams and then choke on other concepts that he puts forth. Jerry Falwell Jr. types will pay close attention to Thomas More, as his father surely would have. And as we As we discuss More, Thomas More and his ruminations, the nature of which are sure to piss off just about everybody, they will likely trigger all sorts of discontent in all sorts and all kinds of hypersensitive young people whom just won't be able to listen to Thomas More's thoughts without fear and trembling, to quote Soren Kierkegaard, the philosopher. Which makes me question, why do we have to have and issue trigger warnings in the first place if Thomas More's thoughts, his language, his concepts, ideals, they infuriate and piss off and trigger everybody? As if from the Blair Witch Project, I'm scared to close my eyes and I'm scared to open them. We're going to die out there. Hey, to you Generation Zs especially, you're not going to die, I promise you. And you can't ban Thomas More and his ideas, even if you wanted to. His books have been floating around the world for 508 years. But you can try to cancel him on social media, trash the crap out of him. In any event, trigger warning issued. We are now going to discuss Thomas More, the saint, and his ideas. Now, Thomas More was a real guy, first of all. He existed. He was real. He lived in real life England, St. Thomas More did. And he was, he was a hard man. He didn't put up with a lot of shit. No, he did not. In common with vocal, hardcore progressives of the modern variety, though, and, found throughout all of America today, St. Thomas More, he did not demonstrate a great deal of tolerance for those who held opposing views. No, he did not. Catholic teachings were Catholic teachings, dogma, ideology, and it was not up for debate. One believed or one faced the consequences for non-belief. Like Orwell's thought police, More was going to deal with those who even thought deviantly because that was a very bad thing to do in his mind. Morality is cowardice, and St. Thomas was no coward. Morality must always yield to ideology, and he was ready to act. And as is the case today, one definitely need toe the line in the days of Thomas More, as in today, or else, if you don't, you will be tortured, deballed, and canceled. Like with excommunication, to be canceled today is to be canceled forever. A lifetime ostracism. Obliteration without the possibility of redemption. Now, this is progressive behavior. Modern America, as you'll soon hear, has much in common with Thomas More's utopia, where opposition to the approved ideology, it can get anyone obliterated forever, and there will be pain administered in the process of punishing all those possessed of deviant thoughts. A most fervent believer in Catholicism and its teaching, as Lord Chancellor of England, More was prepared to do what needed to be done. He was no shirker of responsibility. No, Thomas More wasn't. He believed punishment of heretics needed to be severe, and that this was the most Christian of all possible responses in the face of heresy. Those whom opposed Roman Catholic doctrine, things were going to get rough, very dicey in a hurry. And it is not in dispute, really, that St. Thomas relied on harsh measures. Some cases, he determined, demanded extreme measures be imposed with prejudice. Imprisonment, torture, and execution was called for. It was the only possible response in certain egregious cases. And let us agree up front, the man we know as St. Thomas More, when it came down to heresy, all things heresy, he was prepared to go all the way. all the way, to do all that was necessary. He would never, never shy away from his responsibilities, his duties, to make them pay and rid society of all heretics. Moore was fully committed to reliance upon enhanced interrogation techniques of his age and the use of black sites, such as those found both in the Tower of London and or in the basement of his own home, where all such wet work was to be carried out. St. Thomas More admitted he had written that he personally had been engaged in, but most reluctantly, of course, the dispersing of and dishing out of rough treatment upon heretics, Protestant reformers, and the always to be feared by dogmatists, the non-believers. But only in those cases and under those circumstances in which Thomas More, St. Thomas More, had determined his personal involvement in dishing out those harsh penalties was compelled. For he absolutely was committed to protecting the interests of both church and state. You know, but in the interest of full disclosure, today in the year of our Lord, 2024, and you know, an undercurrent, you know, there exists an undercurrent of deniers convinced that there is no physical evidence that St. Thomas More ever personally tortured anybody in his basement abattoir, the likes of which rivaled even the terrible, you know, wherein he performed his daily wet work. But the guy's already admitted, he's written that he participated personally. You know, so this denial that Thomas More was personally involved in torture, you know, I can only respond, well, sure. You know, after 5 centuries, you know, 508 years to be precise, forensic evidence of St. Thomas's crimes, those, you know, implementation of hard measures, if you must, are hard to come by and no doubt would defy the best efforts of the most skilled of the CSI units we can watch on NBC or anywhere, you know, to unearth the dirt on this saint's bestial activities. Physical evidence, forensic evidence, after 500 years is hard to find. All we can say is evidence of absence, in this case, really is the absence of evidence. We'll just have to take, you know, Thomas More's own words as all the evidence we need. Even though French philosopher Michel Foucault would have us believe that words mean nothing, which means by way of extrapolation that neither do his. So we'll ignore him. I believe we should simply move on. The harsh measures of Thomas More, of the 1516 variety. Well, we can only imagine. If you've ever toured the Tower of London, you understand the torturous instruments that existed there and what went on. And, you know, and not too many years after Thomas More did his thing, to give you a feeling for, you know, the activities of his contemporaries only 3 or 4 decades later, take even the terrible. He was busy at work in Russia, trussing up fellow Ruskis and cooking people in giant frying pans that even had ordered, especially made for the purpose of frying the people alive. I mean, harsh measures, you say, Thomas? We get the picture. By the way, I find it notable that Stalin, once speaking of Ivan the Terrible, said he did good things, but he just didn't go far enough. Whoa, whoa. It gives you idea of what life in Stalin's Russia was like, no matter what the New York Times or George Bernard Shaw would tell you. Well, I think I'm getting off the point, but not really. One can only imagine what treatment, the blind sheikh, the likes of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, might have endured at the hands of a very motivated, very committed, and very angry St. Thomas More. But I think it's safe to say that being waterboarded 183 times and subjected to what the CIA has referred to as rectal rehydration, would have been a cakewalk relative to the rough treatment that was meted out to unfortunates by St. Thomas More in 1516 of the type that he has admitted to doing. By the way, let the record show that, I just feel like I should go on, up with this point. The CIA documents that have been released, CIA documents, that rectal rehydration serves several purposes, including the provision to the recipient of nutritional supplements, though this would appear to me a most shocking and unorthodox means by which to introduce and supplement the incarcerated prisoner's dietary needs. Wouldn't you think? I do. The stated primary benefit, according to the CIA, of rectal rehydration, allegedly, it's in the assistance it provides in clearing a person's head. Repeat, clearing a person's head. As an aside, I remain uncertain as to exactly what rectal rehydration might fully entail, but my imagination allows me to think I do know. But it clearly rectal rehydration, is as far as I can tell, is not engaged in for any known medical benefit whatsoever, and certainly is not designed, I'm pretty sure, for pleasure purposes. So I think we might all agree that rectal rehydration would not be the preferred method most people would elect to make up for any caloric deficiencies that they were suffering, and would generally not be seen by those rectally rehydrated as being a good thing. Let's leave it at that. Clearly, the process sounds more than a bit ominous. And I think we'd all agree to that. And this rectal rehydration by the CIA is not of the nature that was the daily regimen of that great believer in the power of passive resistance, Mahatma Gandhi, whom arranged, as it turns out, to be administered to him daily. Enemas provided only that they were performed only by very young girls. Well, I'll go on record right now and report with nothing but my own imagination to rely upon that rectal rehydration would definitely, and I mean definitely, clear my head. Of that, I am not in doubt. Yet the CIA's claim that rectal rehydration clears your head, to me, is eerily reminiscent of the Jefferson Airplane's lyrical lines to the song White Rabbit, as sung by that notorious wild woman of a lead singer, Grace Slick. Exactly the meaning or the interpretation of the meaning of the lines in that song, feed your head, oh yeah, feed it, remain, to me, ambiguous, even at the distance of a half century post that song's fast rise to the top of the Billboard charts. So, in any event, returning to Thomas More, He published Utopia in 1516, and I am positive he wouldn't have foreseen at that point, though he did see far into the future. Irony of ironies, he would not have seen that on the 1st of July, 1535, 19 years later, he'd himself be standing trial for treason, accused by Henry VIII, of all things, of non-belief, maliciously denying royal supremacy. And for that sin, he was condemned to death. And More was beheaded in the Tower of London while Henry VIII was out hunting that day. Yeah, what goes around comes around, doesn't it? And we shall, like Douglas MacArthur, return to the details of Thomas More's Utopia when we return in our next episode of Utopia. Give us more. Give us Thomas More. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Head out to the sea, crystal blue water surrounding me. Tap to the wind, taste the sea breeze, tropical heaven on the coral sea. A little more rum, I think of my wife. What did I do? Have I ruined my life? Tell her I've changed, become a new man. I promise I will, and I know that I can. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? The sea is now boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. Years from tomorrow, days from the land, nothing can save me unless fate lends a hand. Storm, it is worse than I know. The wind and the waves are taking their toll. I look to the stars, there's none I can see. I'm afraid fate, she has answered me. Only moments my story will end. There was a story I wanted to send. Oh, how I dream for the calm of the sea. Beautiful face smiling back at me. The sea is boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on